Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Knoll. Nice to have you with us today. We have a program divided into three parts today. The first on health and healing. Edith Cowan University, which is in Australia, has an article that is about eating more fruit and vegetables is linked to less stress. That's important. We could all do with less stress. That's only one of many articles I'll be sharing with you. But then more importantly today, a very comprehensive, in-depth, original investigative report. It is published on PRN.fm, and it's called The FDA, Shock Troops for the Pharmaceutical Industrial Complex. Why is it important to know about this article and to share it with everyone you can? Because right now, every effort is being made by the pharmaceutical industrial complex with its allies, Anthony Fauci, the CDC, the FDA, U.S. Public Health Service, the World Health Organization, and supported by the mainstream media, to attack anyone who has any legitimate and factual information that challenges the existing narrative on any aspect of the COVID pandemic, be it, is the PCR test actually a gold standard for determining COVID-19? Can it actually see COVID-19 when you look for it? Well, that depends upon how many amplifications, but we're doing an average of 40 to 45 amplifications, and Anthony Fauci himself says above 35 is junk. You're not seeing anything. It's active or important. But more importantly, can't even test whether it's a current COVID or a previous COVID. You might have had a cold 5 years ago, have the antibody in there. And so you see, so much of the official narrative is simply misinformation. What is not misinformation is that COVID is a real virus, it is a new virus, and it is deadly. It kills people. That is absolute. Everything else? Well, then we have to look to see what is true and what is not. I wish we could trust our agencies to oversee the safety and efficacy of all foods and products, but we can't. Today, I will completely deconstruct everything about the FDA. Why is that important? You will hear information for the first time, never before reported anywhere, about why it is such a utterly corrupt agency. Not everyone, but those in power, yes. So share this, because that's the agency, the only agency, that determines the safety and efficacy of any drug or vaccine. Now, the CDC will help fund the creation of vaccines and promote them, but they don't pass on the safety. FDA does. So right now we're having substantial issues with coronavirus vaccines, including the fact that now they're launching a whole campaign to vaccinate children, even babies. 6 months of old was one just vaccinated. So the question is, what is the science supporting that? Could anyone in this audience, and we have a lot of scientists and doctors, nurses and PhDs in this audience, a lot of academicians, show me the peer-reviewed literature supporting that babies, infants, toddlers, young people are susceptible to being infected and dying? The key there is mortality. Now, the flu, the common influenza, yeah, that can kill people of all ages, including young people with compromised immune system and older people. But COVID, all the studies have shown just the opposite. The people most likely to succumb or be infected are people over the age of 70 who have multiple comorbidities, 3 to 2.6 comorbidities like heart disease, cancer. So wouldn't it make sense that we put our energy into protecting those people? But then people are taking the vaccine as if that will protect them. That's their knowledge. That's what they've been indoctrinated with. Take the vaccine so life can go back to normal. So you've done the actual clinical studies proving that the vaccine will prevent infection. No, there are no such studies. No, it's only the studies were done specifically to keep moderate to severe symptoms from occurring so that it's manageable. It does not test whether or not, and has never tested, whether you can become infected or pass an infection, or that you will go to a hospital and go to an ICU and ventilator and die. None of that was tested. So a public relations campaign has led us to believe otherwise. Now, whether you vaccinate or not is your business. I just finished, and I'm back at my animal sanctuary, a long study working every day, 7 days a week, with a large group of people who are interested in slowing down and, wherever possible, reversing the aging process. In the process of doing that, to help them recover their good health, even if they have some form of comorbidity. And most did, though I didn't know that. But a person asked me in one of the lectures, "You haven't asked a single person a single question about themselves." And I said, "That's none of my business. I've never asked anyone, not even my friends, unless they volunteered it, 'Did you get vaccinated?'" I had a friend volunteer that he got both vaccines. Okay, that's fine. I fully support him in that choice. But if I have another friend that says, "I chose, after looking at the evidence, to wait," I would support that. That's freedom of choice. I only encourage people to really do your independent homework in CNN and the other publications. Those are not independent, objective sources of information. Go to the actual scientific literature. Listen to the doctors who are in the front line of fighting this, and become more aware of what you're not being told and the possibilities of why. I've always been pro-vaccine, but only when it's shown first to have passed the standards of gold standards. And if it doesn't, then I'm not going to support it. In fact, I have spent hundreds of articles and time and effort and scholarship showing you some of the things that we were told were safe and effective that were not. After all, this is the program that challenged the incursion into Vietnam. We were right. They were wrong. The whole weapons of mass destruction, they were right. Wrong. We were right. New York Times was wrong and led that whole with Judith Miller. They were wrong at a cost of over 1 million people dead or displaced minimally. Was anyone held accountable for that? No. And not a little error in judgment. So when you think about the things we have been on the side of protesting, DDT, Aldrin, heptachlor, copper coral 7, radiation of our food, glyphosate, we were right on every single issue, every single one, not one mistake. They were wrong on every single issue. Then why should they be the ultimate and only determinant factor of what is right and what is wrong? That's the world we live in today. And that's why we will look for the truth wherever it is without being political. I don't care if a person's Catholic, Muslim, atheist, agnostic, a Jew. That is their business, not mine. I don't know if a person's vegan or not. It's not my business. Your political or ideological preferences, not my business. I deal with what I can prove that's important for everyone in this moment. That's the key. So today I'm going to share with you a journey into understanding how utterly, completely corrupt all of the agencies in dealing with COVID are, and other drugs as well. And I will be very specific, and everything is fully documented with total scholarship. Let them show the same. They won't. Let them show where the Wuhan virus came from. They've lied. Anthony Fauci's been caught lying, and we will go into that in greater depth, because now scientists from all over the world are joining, signing petitions. Tell us the truth. That is not possible, because what if telling the truth meant that you would also be shown to be complicit in the creation of gain-of-function virus that damn nearly destroyed societies and did destroy lives? So you see, you're not going to get the truth from those who are implicated. So that's for independent physicians, scientists, and others who are not biased but looking for the truth. That's what we're about to do over the next 3 weeks. Now, after that, I'll be coming back to doing health and nutrition, environmental issues, important social issues, calls from the audience, conversations with remarkable minds, what I've been doing all these decades. But for the next 3 weeks, I'm going to provide you with all the information that you would need in order to understand what information is reliable and what is not, what is biased. It's up to you to do your homework after that. That's our program today. Edith Cowan University just did a study, and for many people in this audience, it won't be a surprise, the outcome. They simply said that eating a diet rich in fruit and vegetables is associated with less stress. The study examined the link between fruit and vegetable intake and stress levels of more than 8,600 Australians aged 25 to 91 participating in the Australian Diabetes, Obesity, and Lifestyle Study. at the Baker Heart and Diabetes Institute. The findings revealed people who ate at least 470 grams of fruit and vegetables daily had a 10% lower stress level than those who consumed less than 230 grams. By the way, 20.35 grams to an ounce, so we're not talking about a lot of food. I would triple that. In fact, we just finished having people consume what would be equivalent to 15 servings of fruits and vegetables a day, primarily in their juices and smoothies, and one meal a day. Everyone was full. People lost weight, gained strength, gained muscle mass, gained bone, overcome osteoporosis. Where do you see the results? Staggering. One guy who was came, I did not know he had had a stroke, and his doctor recommended him not coming, that he couldn't walk, he'd lose his balance. Well, gee whiz. Surprise, surprise. He was peeling potatoes, wanted to work in the kitchen helping out. Fine, follow the health protocols, mask, gloves, da-da-da. And there he is. He says, my God, I've got the feelings back in my fingers. I can feel texture. I couldn't before I came. Oh, and also his first day, he was able to do a little under 2 minutes of whipping a rope, both hands, and he did over 33 minutes. Well, that shows you what's possible, but not with a standard diet, not with the standard way we do things. And of course, most of the people don't deal with stress in the best way for themselves. They use comfort foods, drugs, alcohol, medications. Did you ever look at the side effects in the package insert for an antidepressant drug and see that depression is one of the first side effects and that suicidal tendencies is up the top? And what about antipsychotic medication where psychosis is a side effect? Well, does anyone actually look to see how many of the people who have committed crimes, mass murders, in the last 30 years have been on these antipsychotic medications, or how many of the 20 to 22 vets each day who blow their brains out or commit suicide were on these antidepressant or antipsychotic medications? No, because if you saw the true answer, you'd say, well, then we're giving them the wrong protocol. So what we're looking at is the healthiest protocol. So if eating more fruits and vegetables or having more fruit or vegetable juice can help you get that up, then that means your stress levels are going to come down. At least this was just your diet. That didn't even include yoga, meditation, prayer, being close to nature, all of which are positive in helping with stress. And that was published in Clinical Nutrition. Now, for those of you taking omega-3 fatty acid supplementation, what is the newest from the Shack Cork University of Medical Sciences? It improves cardiometabolic factors in kidney disease patients. Now, this is a meta-analysis, meaning they reviewed many different studies in the British Medical Journal of Neuropathy, and it just gives more evidence that the omega-3 fatty acid is already good for your heart, good for your brain, good for turning off the inflammation in your body. It also helps you if you have chronic kidney disease. This is the second study that we've given on this, and they looked at 13 separate studies, and including ones that were double-blind, placebo-controlled, and shows that omega-3, it works. Also, I mentioned this last week, but now I have another study from Northwestern University published in Frontiers in Human Neuroscience, and what it says is this. Sound waves boost older adults' memory and deep sleep, meaning gentle sound stimulation like a rush of a waterfall or rain hitting on a tin roof that helps synchronize to the rhythm of the brain waves significantly enhances your deep sleep and improves your ability to recall words. And deep sleep is critical for memory consolidation. So that begins in middle age. And deep sleep decreases substantially, which scientists believe contributes to memory loss and premature death. So sound stimulation, find the sound that relaxes you, and then try that before you're going to bed. Also from Loma Linda University, an article published in the American Journal of Clinical Nutrition, calcium and vitamin D cancels vegan women's increased fracture risk. Yeah, that's good news, because some vegans, unfortunately, are not supplementing with vitamin B12. And we got to make sure that we have strong bones. Now, you can get it with a vegan diet, but you're going to have to make sure you get adequate calcium, magnesium, vitamin D, zinc, the omega-3 fatty acids, adequate protein, manganese, all of which are important. And they studied this in 34,541 men and women, 45 and older, who enrolled in the health study over a five-year period. Once again, a lot of people, as they grow older, they're not aware of hip fractures happening because they don't have adequate calcium in their body or magnesium. So, important. And finally, from Mount Sinai School of Medicine, food dyes. There's a lot of your cereals, a lot of foods, cakes and pies, and they can cause disease when the immune system is dysregulated. So artificial food colorants can cause disease when the immune system has become dysregulated. That's according to the Icahn School of Medicine at Mount Sinai, published in Cell Metabolism. And by the way, if you don't think a leaky gut is important, and there was a time when people didn't think leaky gut even existed, it does. University of Zurich says this, and this is a major article, and it says epithelial cells, and we know that they form the covering of most of your internal and external surfaces of the human body. This protective layer acts as a defense against invaders, including bacteria and viruses, environmental toxins, pollutants, and allergens. If the skin and mucosal barriers are damaged or leaky, foreign agents such as bacteria can enter into the tissue and cause local and often chronic inflammation, both direct and indirect. So now they're saying that having a leaky epithelial barrier can cause 2 billion, with a B, chronic diseases each year throughout the world. So something that was poo-hooed 25 years ago is now saying, yeah, billions of people have been affected. And by the way, Tufts University, big heart study, benefits of mushroom powders, all those different mushrooms, well, start using them. Chaga, C-H-A-G-A, shiitake, S-I-H-I-I-T-A-K-E, maitake, M-A-I-T-A-K-E, reishi, R-E-I-S-H-I, I would add lion's mane in there, and portobello, white button, and oyster mushrooms are just some. They're all good, and they all help you big time. All right? Cordyceps, C-O-R-D-Y-C-E-P, they're all good for you. All right? So get your mushrooms into your diet. I'd like to welcome all of you from all over the world. I'm Gary Nall. This is a special in-depth investigative report. I would have hoped that the mainstream media, anyone in the mainstream media, would have taken the time and effort to look at the facts. They're not hidden. They're just a matter of patience, and you could find all this. This article is entitled, The FDA, Shock Troops for the Pharmaceutical Industrial Complex. As of this week, over 194 million doses of the COVID-19 vaccines have been administered in the United States. Consequently, a growing majority of Americans are delighted that life may return to normal because most believe they are now protected from infection. Clearly, that is not the case. Bill Maher tested positive for COVID last week and had to cancel his television show for the first time in, well, since 1993. This was despite Maher having been fully vaccinated. Moreover, the vaccine's serious adverse effects are being downplayed by health officials and the media. Why? We can't answer that. Who will experience an adverse effect appears to be arbitrary. Therefore, it is a game of Russian roulette as to whether a person will be critically injured or be protected from the virus. One of the world's most accomplished rock guitar musicians, Eric Clapton, received both doses of AstraZeneca's COVID vaccine and had such severe reactions he feared he might never play the guitar again. Here's what he wrote in a message. Pope, quote, about 6 weeks later, after receiving the first vaccine, I was offered and took the second AstraZeneca shot, but with little more knowledge of the dangers. Needless to say, the reactions were disastrous. My hands and feet were either frozen, numb, or burning, and pretty much useless for 2 weeks. I feared I would never play again. I suffer from peripheral neuropathy and should never have gone near that needle. But the propaganda said the vaccine was safe for everyone, end quote. However, it is not simply a minuscule few who are suffering undesirable COVID vaccine events, such as blood clots and other cardiovascular complications, anaphylaxis, severe allergic reactions, various neuropathies, abnormal menstrual bleeding, and suspected miscarriages, extreme muscle weakness and fatigue, etc. If this were the case, an argument could be made for siding with benefits over risks. COVID vaccines have only been administered for less than 6 months, and it's becoming increasingly clear that the risks may outweigh the benefits. Suspected numbers of miscarriages following COVID vaccine is especially worrisome. A government study published in the New England Journal of Medicine attempted to analyze and downplay the risk. Yet at the same time, the study observed a trend of 11.6% of spontaneous abortions occurring less than 13 weeks after the RNA vaccination. It is becoming increasingly obvious that these vaccine safety profiles are far less than Anthony Fauci, the FDA, and the CDC are touting. More younger adults are experiencing adverse vaccine symptoms than from the risks due to acquiring a mild coronavirus. Worldwide, reported adverse events and deaths are escalating dramatically. Now, mind you, this is the CDC's own official vaccine adverse events reporting system, Veris Report. They now claim that vaccine deaths have now reached 4,434 as of May 13, 2021, which is more vaccine-related deaths from conventional vaccines recorded in Veris during the past 21 years. Since Veris is a passive reporting system, the actual serious adverse effect rate may be as high as 1 in 10 who receive the vaccine. No other vaccine on the CDC's vaccination schedule has such a poor record of safety. But let us put this in proper perspective. If there was one or two deaths out of 20, 40, or 60 million people, you would say, okay, the benefit to the public is worth it for the common good, they would argue. But when any product, including previous vaccines or drugs, killed 10 to 20 people, it was immediately put a black box warning or removed from the market in its entirety. Story over. So how is it that historically, up to this moment, to the last 6 months, you could not have 20 to 40 deaths? If you reached 50 deaths, there'd be an outcry. There'd be federal investigations. But 4,434 deaths, minimally, it could be as high as 40,000 for all we know, based upon underreporting and voluntary reporting. Crickets, not a word. And to the contrary, not only is no one criticizing 4,434 deaths, but they're actually promoting it. Everyone should take it, including children, with dozens and dozens of vaccines, COVID vaccines, in the works. As with Bill Maher, fully vaccinated people are still being infected and testing positive. Younger, healthy adults who earlier had an insignificant chance of becoming sick or dying from the SARS-CoV-2 virus are now being injured and in some cases dying from the vaccines. A recent study published in the Journal of the American Medical Association observed delayed hypersensitivity vaccine reactions well after injections. The University of Pennsylvania estimates that between 5 to 10% of recipients of the RNA vaccines have, quote, severe adverse reactions, end quote. An inordinately high percent compared to every other non-COVID vaccine. And a group of medical institutions, including the University of Greifswald School of Medicine and the Medical University of Vienna, are proposing a new medical condition, quote, vaccine-induced prothrombotic immune thrombocytopenia, end quote, now be associated with the AstraZeneca and Johnson & Johnson vaccines. Did that not stop everyone for a moment and say, we now have a new medical definition, it's so severe? Not at all. Nothing to see here. Keep walking. A recent paper warns about the dangers of vaccine-induced prion disease. The list of adverse effects continues to mount. A Pfizer document, their own in-house document, refers to the possibility of COVID vaccine shedding to the unvaccinated. Doctors are coming forward and accusing the CDC of scrubbing the statistics of actual vaccine-related deaths. The risks were quite obvious in the vaccine maker's own clinical trial documents before the FDA awarded COVID vaccines with emergency use approval to launch a nationwide vaccination program. Whether or not health officials at the CDC or the FDA thoroughly deliberated and had debates in-house on many warnings or simply ignore them is an open to debate. But the evidence strongly leads towards the latter. Earlier, we were presented the historical evidence of widespread corruption at the CDC. However, the FDA is far more influential because it is the final watchdog that determines a drug's efficacy and safety profile. In the most perverse scenario, the FDA relies upon outside so-called experts to sit on its advisory committees to review a drug or vaccine safety. Many of these experts have a gross conflict of interest within the pharmaceutical industry. This institutional dilemma is steeped into the FDA's very DNA. As far back as 2006, Public Citizen discovered that one out of three of outside consultants and advisor members to the FDA had financial conflicts. The situation has only worsened over the years. A POGO investigation in October last year uncovered several advisors on the FDA's Vaccines and Related Biological Products Advisory Committee who had direct ties with the COVID vaccine companies, including direct payments for consulting fees. Dr. Archana Chatterjee, for example, has received over $200,000 from agreements with these companies. The same is true for the committee's chairman, University of Michigan Dr. Arnold Monto, who received fees from the largest vaccine firms, including Pfizer, Sanofi, GlaxoSmithKline, and Novartis. The previous chair, Dr. Hannah Elshaly from Baylor University, had to recuse herself due to her role in supervising Moderna's COVID-19 vaccine clinical trials. Earlier, Monto was the principal investigator for Sanofi's influenza vaccine. Another is the president of Mayor Harry Medical College, where coronavirus clinical trials were conducted. Three other committee members, likewise, held close conflict of interest relationships with vaccine makers. Shortly before issuing emergency use for approval, a second POGO analysis concluded that the FDA committee whitewashed the warnings indicating the use of approval. A second POGO analysis came in on top of that, so that they were biased in their vaccine COVID trials. The meeting was adjourned by the FDA director of the Office of Vaccine Research and Review in favor of greenlighting the vaccines before committee members suspicious of the clinical results could weigh in. Professor Carl Elliott, a medical ethicist at the University of Minnesota, summarized the problem of corporate bias now plaguing the FDA. Quote, "You do something positive for a company that you feel confident is going to pay you back for it later on," end quote. He also stated, quote, "and they do," end quote. The FDA's current rules regarding conflict of interest is strictly limited to the honor system. In Europe, on the other hand, the European Medicine Agency strictly prohibits experts with ties to private industry from sitting on its advisory committees. Even with FDA efforts to crack down on conflicts of interest due to congressional pressure, the industry has found other means to get their representatives onto advisory panels, and the heads of the agency willingly turned a blind eye. A Science magazine expose reported on the growing strategy of pay after conflicts of interest. Outside advisors will declare no conflicts, but then rule in favor of a drug or vaccine only to be reimbursed later on. The journal's Science Review of Compensation Records uncovered, quote, pay-after schemes for the approval of 28 psychopharmacologicals, arthritis, cardiac, and renal drugs. The investigation also uncovered, quote, of the more than $24 million in personal payments or research support from industry to the 16 top-earning advisors, who received more than $300,000 each, 93% came from the makers of drugs those advisors previously reviewed or for competitors, end quote. Probing still deeper, the Pacific Legal Foundation released an analytical review of 2,952 rules issued by the Department of Health and Human Services over a 17-year period, the foundation determined that 75% of these rules were unconstitutional and, quote, issued by low-level officials and employees with no authority to issue rules, end quote. With respect to the FDA, dozens had no democratic controls and involved tens of millions of dollars ruled over by career bureaucrats. Every American who is prescribed a drug by a physician has the belief that the pill has undergone rigorous trials to scrutinize its safety and will be effective. And when there are known potential adverse effects, we blindly assume the attending physician knows these dangers. However, this is a myth perpetrated not only by drug makers, but also by our own federal health agencies. As we have reported on many occasions, iatrogenic deaths, deaths caused by medical error and prescribed medications is now the third leading cause of mortality in the United States. The Institute of Medicine has warned about, quote, the nation's epidemic of medical errors, end quote. A large percent of these errors are related to adverse drug events. The FDA states, quote, adverse drug events are one of the leading causes of morbidity and mortality in healthcare, end quote. Dr. Carl Ferberg published an article in the Archives of Internal Medicine, one of our most respected scientific and medical journals, proposing sweeping changes to the FDA. Ferberg and his colleagues wrote, quote, we see 8 major problems with the current system of assessment and assurance of drug safety at the FDA, end quote. A fundamental problem is the FDA's initial review for drug approval that often fails to detect serious adverse drug reactions. Quote, a study by the U.S. General Accountability Office concluded that 51% of all approved drugs had at least one serious adverse drug reaction that was not recognized during the approval process, end quote. Their words, not ours. A 2003 investigation published in The Independent in the United Kingdom reported, quote, under pressure from the pharmaceutical industry, the FDA routinely conceals information it considers commercially sensitive, leaving medical specialists unable to assess the true risks of approved drugs, end quote. One case involved a very popular over-the-counter drug, the painkiller ibuprofen. The investigators' search uncovered concealed data showing that ibuprofen increased heart attack risks by 25%. Even Freedom of Information filings to the FDA do not produce all the information being requested. For example, a group of Swiss investigators filed a Freedom of Information Act request to procure trial data about the musculoskeletal pain drug celecoxib and received back only 16 of 27 trials conducted on it. A private, separate Freedom of Information Act request concerning a similar drug had pages and paragraphs deleted because sections of the document were marked as, quote, trade secrets. An even worse case involved a leaked report concerning internal memos and secret FDA reports provided detailed evidence that the FDA approved 9 different antidepressants, representing a total of 22 studies enrolling 4,250 children, while knowing full well that the risk of, quote, suicide-related events, end quote, was twice as high as children taking a placebo. These are just several examples among numerous others, which may best be summarized by a Forbes article entitled, The FDA is Basically Approving Everything. Isn't it time for real truth-telling? The FDA, which was budgeted for $5.9 billion in 2019, is ruled and governed by a small group of political scientists who have abdicated their ethical responsibilities as physicians and medical professionals. With all the controversy and debate over the efficacy and safety of the new RNA vaccines and the aggressive emergency approval of the ineffective anti-COVID drug remdesivir, we may consider a Harvard University article published in the Journal of Law, Medicine, and Ethics entitled Institutional Corruption of Pharmaceuticals and the Myth of Safe and Effective Drugs. I repeat, this is from Harvard, published in the Journal of Law, Medicine, and Ethics quote, institutional corruption of pharmaceuticals and the myth of safe and effective drugs, end quote. And here's what it says, and this is over a 40-year period, quote, from the Journal of Law, Medicine, and Ethics. Patients have suffered from a largely hidden epidemic of side effects from drugs that usually have few offsetting benefits. The pharmaceutical industry has corrupted the practice of medicine through its influence over what drugs are developed, how they are tested, and how medical knowledge is created. Since 1906, heavy commercial influence has compromised congressional legislation to protect the public from unsafe drugs. The authorization of user fees in 1992 has turned drug companies into the FDA's prime clients, deepening the regulatory and cultural capture of the agency, end quote. We are witnessing the pharmaceutical industry's increasing its demands for shorter than average times for the FDA to review new drug submissions. Alternatively, they have an option to pay the FDA costly fees to have these drugs fast-tracked under an accelerated approval program, thereby jumping over many regulatory hurdles to bring their products to market more quickly. According to a 2019 review of the program conducted by the University of Nebraska's Institute for Operations Research, quote, from 1992 to 2008, 36% of post-market studies had not been completed, and 50% of uncompleted studies took on average 5 years to begin with, end quote. Yet throughout the duration, these drugs continued to be prescribed and reap enormous profits from the companies benefiting from the FDA loopholes. So in effect, you were using, through your physician or hospital, you were using drugs that had not had the complete study analyzed. As a consequence, the FDA's entire regulatory protocol has consistently deteriorated with each passing year, from a system originally mandated to function as a guardian to protect patients from dubious industry commercial interest. It has been transformed into an anti-preventative pipeline favoring drug companies, bottom line, and their shareholders. In 2013, the Union of Concerned Scientists released its investigative report, 4 years after the Obama administration launched a process to increase transparency in the federal sciences agencies, another well-meaning Obama initiative that failed miserably to make any fundamental change. The union concluded the FDA had created a culture lacking scientific integrity, including no formal procedures for investigating scientific misconduct. The FDA's serious failures to carry out its duties to monitor and regulate drug companies are well exemplified in the case of the North Carolina outsourcing firm Cetero, C-E-T-E-R-O. After several years of gross negligence to thoroughly review pharmaceutical drugs, mostly generic knockoffs submitted for licensure, the agency finally uncovered Cetero's five-year history of faking documents and data or early clinical trials and bioanalytics. While we expect contractors who carry out clinical trials for large drug companies to be busy at work conducting research on the recorded trial data, on over 1,900 occasions, there was no personnel at all in the Cetero facilities. Approximately 1,400 trials for roughly 100 drugs were faked, fraudulent, non-existent. Whereas the FDA did little to conduct a thorough investigation, the European Medicine Agency, on the other hand, discovered that Cetero and its big pharma partners, including Roche and Genentech, failed to submit, ready for this, 80,000 reports on Americans' approved drugs that killed over 15,000 Europeans. I repeat, they failed to submit 80,000 reports on American approved drugs that killed over 15,000 Europeans. That means the FDA, in collusion, allowed 15,000 human beings' lives to be extinguished because of gross, utter negligence. We need to consider that the Mayo Clinic is on record stating that the last 10 years of cancer research are utterly useless due to systemic fraud. To understand the systemic rot eating away the FDA, we may take note of the research of Dr. Charles Seif and his colleagues at New York University. Seif and his team undertook the task to investigate and analyze the extent to which the FDA covers up evidence of fraud and corruption in medical drug trials. They reviewed FDA documents for about 600 clinical trials. One of Seif's primary questions was the frequency the FDA officials discover flagrant and intentional misconduct and subsequently decide to bury the evidence and prevent it from becoming public to the medical community. He discovered such actions to be an official pattern within the agency. Given the high rate of content deleted or blocked out from the documents the FDA provided, the investigators could only determine which pharmaceutical company or drug was involved in 1 out of 6 of the reviewed trials. For one trial alone, where FDA inspectors found significant fraud and misconduct, 78 different medical publications printed articles based upon that single study. Wow. In an article for Slate, Seif wrote, quote, "Nobody ever finds out which data is bogus, which experiments are tainted, and which drugs might be on the market under false pretenses. The FDA has repeatedly hidden evidence of scientific fraud, not just from the public, but also from its most trusted scientific advisors, even as they were deciding whether or not a new drug should be allowed on the market. Even a congressional panel investigating a case of fraud regarding a dangerous drug could not get forthright answers," end quote. In one case, a new anti-blood clotting drug involved 4 large trials recruiting thousands of patients in clinical sites in over a dozen countries. According to Seif, one of the trials, quote, was a fiasco, end quote. In half the 16 clinical sites, the FDA discovered, quote, misconduct, fraud, fishy behavior, or other practices so objectionable that the data had to be thrown out, end quote. One Colorado site falsified data. At the Mexican site, there was, quote, systemic disregard of medical records, end quote. Despite these overwhelming problems, the drug trial was published favorably in the prestigious medical journal The Lancet. The FDA found similar problems in the 3 other trials. In one, the data was ruled worthless, end quote. The FDA advisory committee of, quote, expert reviewers were only informed that inspectors discovered only, quote, significant issues at 2 sites in one of the trials. The drug was nevertheless approved in 2011. Since then, lawsuits for wrongful death from the drug continued to increase. Anyone challenged the FDA? No. Major media doing any expose on this? No. Anyone within the larger community of lawmakers in Washington, Democrat or Republican, decide to hold hearings and hold people accountable? No. One of the deeper flaws within the FDA's mode of operations is that it solely relies on the studies and clinical trials conducted by drug makers themselves without conducting any of its own. Consequently, these private firms have complete control over the clinical data. Why should you be concerned? Why am I concerned? Because they control what they want to give the FDA. For example, if a company conducts 20 clinical trials on a potential new drug and 15 trials conclude it's absolutely useless or results in serious reactions and deaths, the company is only required to submit documentation for the 5 trials that are favorable. Well, what about the people who died? Scrub it. What about the people who had disastrous effects? Scrub it. That's how utterly in contempt of real science and public health the FDA is. Over the years, congressional subcommittees have voiced warnings to FDA officials to clean up their act. A House Government Reform Committee reported that both the CDC and FDA's advisory committees for vaccines were, quote, thoroughly compromised with pharmaceutical conflicts of interest. One of the most glaring examples of FDA misconduct, deceit, and cover-up to protect pharmaceutical interest in the agency's history was the federal case against Merck and its anti-inflammatory drug Vioxx. Dr. David Graham, who I interviewed and filmed, was a former associate director for science medicine at the FDA's Office of Drug Safety. He testified before the U.S. Senate. Dr. Graham has impeccable credentials qualifying him as an expert on the failure of pharmaceutical drugs. He graduated from Johns Hopkins University School of Medicine and trained in internal medicine at Yale University and adult neurology at the University of Pennsylvania. This is Dr. Graham's actual testimony before Congress. Quote, "During my career, I believe I've made a real difference for the cause of patient safety. My research and efforts within the FDA led to the withdrawal from the U.S. market of Omniflox, an antibiotic that caused hemolytic anemia, Rezulin, a diabetic drug that caused acute liver failure, PenFen and Redox, weight loss drugs that caused heart valve injury, and PPA, an over-the-counter decongestant and weight loss product that caused hemorrhagic stroke in young women. My research also led to the withdrawal from outpatient use of Trovan, an antibiotic that caused acute liver failure and death. I also contributed to the team effort that led to the withdrawal of Lotarux, a drug for irritable bowel syndrome that caused ischemic colitis, Bacol, a cholesterol-lowering drug that caused severe muscle injury, kidney failure, and death, Seldane, an antihistamine that caused heart arrhythmias and death, and Propulsid, a drug for nighttime heartburn that caused heart arrhythmias and death. I have done extensive work concerning the issue of pregnancy exposure to Accutane, a drug that is used to treat acne but can cause birth defects in some children who are exposed to in utero if their mothers take the drug during the first trimester. During my career, I have recommended the market withdrawal of 12 drugs. Only two of those remain on the market today, Accutane and Araba, a drug for the treatment of rheumatoid arthritis that I and a co-worker believe causes an unacceptable high acute liver failure and death," end quote. The Los Angeles Times reported that witnesses told the Senate panel that Merck and the FDA knowingly had data well before the approval and licensure of Merck's Vioxx painkiller that proved the drug's serious cardiovascular health risks. Nevertheless, the FDA granted its approval without resolving the risks, and Vioxx was aggressively marketed. Testifying about Merck's Vioxx, Dr. Graham states, quote, "Today, we are faced with what may be the single greatest drug safety catastrophe in the history of this country or the history of the world. We are talking about a catastrophe that I strongly believe could have and should have been largely or completely avoided, but it wasn't. And over 100,000 Americans have paid dearly for this failure. In my opinion, the FDA has let the American people down and sadly betrayed public trust," end quote. So who was responsible for causing over 100,000 deaths and many more, according to several reports? Nobody. And who gave the word at the FDA and the company were held accountable for wrongful death? No one. They just paid a fine, made a profit, and shares of their company increased. So, members of Congress have chosen echoed Dr. Graham's concern. Dr. Charles Grassley said he was concerned that the FDA, quote, had a relationship with drug companies that is too cozy. He is correct. What has he done about it? And Dr. Jeff Bingaman said the problem was within the FDA's own culture. This culture is one whereby the pharmaceutical industry, which the FDA is mandated to regulate, is the FDA's most favored and lucrative client. 16 years have passed since Dr. Graham's public statements exposing the life-threatening policies and corruption that infest the FDA. It's difficult to comprehend why the agency has been unable to clean up its act. Instead, the FDA's culture of deceit has only worsened. Nevertheless, the evidence clearly shows that our government health officials would rather support pharmaceutical profiteering than the health and safety of the American citizen. In fact, 45% of its $2.7 billion budget derives from private pharmaceutical user fees. The disturbing data suggests that the FDA evaluation of pharmaceuticals for safety and efficacy may be so flawed that only 4%, I repeat, 4% of all trial results are identified as such. As a result, FDA scientists, officials responsible for approving drugs to the market are kept largely uninformed about the egregious scientific misconduct involved in obtaining study data. Further, these erroneous and fraudulent studies are published in peer-reviewed scientific literature and accepted as valid science, only then to be promoted through the mainstream media. And the American public is virtually defenseless if another medication proves to be unsafe after it is approved. But it gets worse. How so? The agency has been warning against highly effective off-patent drugs to treat early SARS-CoV-19 infections, such as hydroxychloroquine and ivermectin. Shortly after the pandemic was formally announced, with no promising treatment in sight, the FDA recommended hydroxychloroquine, but then reversed its decision in June after Anthony Fauci publicly announced the coming arrival of Gilead's novel drug remdesivir. The FDA's approval of remdesivir baffled many scientists. According to the journal Science, who were keeping a close watch on the drug's clinical reports, which show, quote, disproportionately high number of reports of liver and kidney problems, end quote. Nor did remdesivir lessen hospital stays, nor did it lower mortality rates. It did none of that. 2 months ago, the agency issued a warning statement against use of ivermectin. The, quote, the very next day, end quote, reported the Alliance for Natural Health, quote, Merck announced positive results for a clinical trial on a new drug in eliminating the virus in infected patients, end quote. Again, the FDA had been working in concert with the pharmaceutical industry to advance expensive experimental drugs rather than the cheaper and proven drugs with decades of research on billions of people to back up their safety records. In addition, the FDA has waged a war against alternative medical systems for many decades, including natural supplements. Last September, the agency attempted to ban N-acetylcysteine, NAC, after it showed promise to reduce cytokine storms associated with SARS-2 infection. The supplement had already been shown to improve lung problems due to respiratory infections such as pneumonia and acute respiratory distress syndrome. 3 years ago, an FDA advisory committee met to consider banning five supplements made by specialized compounding pharmacies: alpha-lipoic acid, coenzyme Q10, vitamin B6 or pyridoxal 5-phosphate, creatine monohydrate, and quercetin dehydrate. Earlier, the FDA had banned curcumin, boswellia, and aloe vera from pharmacologic compounding. One of the key executors of the agency's revitalized assault against natural supplements was Trump's appointment of Scott Gottlieb as FDA commissioner. Oh, and by the way, following his 2 years at the FDA helm, Gottlieb quit and joined Pfizer's board of directors. The FDA's argument is rather straightforward, albeit dubious, since supplements including vitamin C and vitamin D and omega-3 fatty acids and even minerals like magnesium and zinc have not been fully submitted to the FDA for evaluation to be registered as approved drugs. It's against the law to make any health claims about their health benefits. This is despite the thousands of peer-reviewed studies in the National Library of Medicine to support their efficacy. The average median cost to conduct a clinical study is over $19 million and up to $2 to $3 billion. In other words, to get vitamin C officially recommended or vitamin D as a viable preventative defense against COVID would require a minimum of $19 million plus other fees and legal costs, and that doesn't even address the problem of who owns it. Vitamin D is a natural supplement, and therefore nobody could own it, so nobody's going to do that. Clearly, quote, clearly these are the actions of an agency looking to restrict supplements in the marketplace, according to the Alliance for Natural Health. So where do we go from here? In conclusion, and to our BAI audience, I want to say goodbye, but we'll continue to the top of the show to finish this by going to PRN.fm. Much of the blame lies on the shoulders of politicians on both sides of the aisle and the mainstream media who have enabled the FDA and CDC to run amok and then propagate the pharmaceutical industry's nonsense. A recent Harvard University and Robert Wood Johnson Foundation survey reported that public trust in America's healthcare system has rapidly fallen during the pandemic to 34%. Only 37% stated they had much trust in the FDA. The trend may very likely continue as a growing number of physicians and medical experts are sounding alarms over the flagrant incompetence of our federal officials leading the national efforts against COVID-19 and the approval vaccine with highly questionable safety records and expensive novel drugs that fail to warrant use. Worldwide, tens of thousands of otherwise orthodox medical professionals are charging Anthony Fauci, the CDC, the FDA, and the World Health Organization with gross mishandling of the pandemic. Lawsuits are underway against national health ministries around the world for deceiving their populations with fraudulent PCR testing, fake mortality rates, and unwarranted public health policies that have produced extreme harm and suffering. As the situation deteriorates, more suits will be anticipated. Sadly, there is no reason to expect the FDA to undergo a structural change. For decades, congressional committees have warned the agency about its ignoring policies similar to a medicine agency, such as independent leadership divorced from pharmaceutical complex and full public funding would be a decent start. Another solution could be the creation of separate and independent national drug safety boards without ties to private industry or overlapping conflicts of interest with the existing health agencies in dire need of reform. However, that tipping point has not been reached to expect any of our politicians to switch sides and for once serve the public health interest. In conclusion, for the scientists, physicians, the activists, the people who care, lay people, and began to do independent research using quality sources, not conspiracy theories, but real quality science, you will be flabbergasted by what you see. You will not be able to believe that all this is actually happening. But it is, and it's happening right in front of all of us. And the only way it stops is by having the truth come out. The trouble is Google, Facebook, all these other sources, they're refusing to allow the truth to come out. They are censoring everything and everyone, and that's unacceptable. So if you go to any of these sources and try to look up ivermectin or look up hydroxychloroquine, you'll be of the belief that, gee whiz, these don't work. And yet go to the actual independent science, look at the peer-reviewed literature, and you'll see hundreds upon hundreds of high-quality studies proving just the opposite. They both not only work, but they work extremely well, especially when taken early on in the disease process. And that way they could actually be used prophylactically by people in the front lines, doctors, nurses, people in hospitals, or those at risk. Why doesn't a person who's at risk with comorbidities ask their doctor about ivermectin in 3-milligram doses and have the doctor instruct them on how to use this? But we're not doing any of the above. Everything that could help prevent a condition from getting worse, we're negating, waiting for the magic of vaccines. Now, we don't know ultimately what the vaccines will do. That will take at least 1 to 2 more years because some adverse effects take a long time to manifest. But look at it this way. We now have more than 1 million children diagnosed with autism. Compare those numbers before the vaccine industry was given exemption from any liability. And ask yourself, how likely is it that suddenly we just had this manifestation of all this disease without cause and effect? Yeah. Then be in my shoes, spending over 20,000 hours researching this subject. It's not about being against vaccines. It's not about being against any drug. I've been mentioning at least 7 major drugs, orthodox drugs, that are proposed and have been used by board-certified mainstream doctors with great success. So any drug that's going to work and be shown to be safe and effective, I'm going to help promote that. I would do the same with a vaccine. But when I see how utterly, completely devoid of proper standards, honesty, that exists within the World Health Organization, which we've exposed, the CDC, which we exposed, now the FDA, which we're exposing, and I've already exposed the AMA, then you start to say, well, who then can I trust? You're going to trust the New York Times? You're going to trust the people on CNN, MSNBC, or Fox? Who are you going to trust? I suggest that you refrain from getting your information to these sources and do your homework. So whatever your choice is, at least you will have confidence that you know more about it than they do. It's your body. It's your choice. I'm Gary Nall. Thank you for listening and have a nice day.